The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
With us is Eoin O'Riordan, Labour MEP, Valerie Cox, journalist. And we have for some time been ringing Gavin Riley pretty much every second week going, you have to come in, Gavin. You used to live here. And given that we've only one weekend left, we finally convinced him in.
I've managed to suppress my PTSD from being in this studio for 5 years on Sunday mornings to come in and say hello to you again.
Well, we much appreciate you coming in. Text to say, Donald Trump reminds me of a boy in our estate about 50 years ago. He was the kid that had a rally chopper bike, a leather football, tennis rackets and a tennis ball. Everything that was popular at the time while the rest of us didn't have a lot. But if we didn't play by his rules, we didn't play with his toys. We eventually got fed up with his rules and regulations and found other games to play while he sat looking out the sitting room window. Well, I mentioned earlier on the statement that we had received from Helen McEntee, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, and Trade. Gavin Riley, during the break, you were saying Simon Harris, Finance Minister, similarly has put out a statement.
Yeah, he's pointing out that there's a meeting of European Finance Ministers tomorrow anyway, which obviously offers the ECOFIN the first chance to discuss the tariff threats from Donald Trump and to discuss all of this. He points out that a significant amount of work and effort in good faith, he says, was put into reaching an agreement with the US to try and protect economic activity flowing in both directions. That was only a few months ago. And that was in the clear interest of economies across Europe, including Ireland, but also, he says, in the clear interest of the United States. Developments now seek to undermine that. They're most concerning and very unwelcome. And tomorrow's meeting of ECOFIN provides him with a valuable and timely opportunity to engage with colleagues from across the EU to share perspectives and to take stock, which to me sounds that they don't intend to react in kind just yet, that they would rather try and let the wind go out of this if they can before committing to any kind of urgency, but nonetheless pointing out that it does come at a time when European leaders are getting together to discuss what the counterpoints could be anyway.
And of course we have that ambassadors meeting then later on today. How coherent will the response, Eoin, be? Because of course this includes non-EU member states in the military activity that has sparked all this off.
You'd hope there'd be a level of coherence. I mean, there's a level of exhaustion in the European institutions that I can detect from, you know, being an MEP, and we're in Strasbourg next week. We've just gone through, you know, what was exhausting in terms of Brexit and the pandemic. And now in the last year, and it's only been a year of the Trump presidency, has really made people on edge. And it feels like every time we wake up that there's something new. The insecurity around Ukraine and military support for Ukraine has been very, very, made a lot of member states feel very insecure. And now the constant psychodrama around tariffs. And the, I suppose, constantly wondering if we're all being cohesive, if we're all in this together. Is there potential for maybe more right-leaning governments to do side deals with the American administration? But certainly this grab on Greenland, the perceived grab on Greenland, has brought people more together. And even the far-right elements within the European Parliament, who are normally, you know, Trump fans, the far-right party within Denmark are horrified by this. So I would hope to be a level of cohesion around it. But there does tend to be a sense that, you know, Trump will say this thing one day and then next week it might change completely. So in terms of tariffs or potential tariffs, he could say something else next week.
So is that why, I mean, Gavin was talking there about reading between the lines of Simon Harris's statement, cool heads seem to be prevailing. Is your take on that cool heads are prevailing in the expectation that he will get distracted by something new and shiny
yeah,
and the issue will go
because
away?
That's the experience of dealing with him. The experience of dealing with him is that something else does. It could be Iran, it could be Venezuela, it could be Cuba, it could be something else. It could be, you know, ICE agents that are doing what they're doing in his own jurisdiction. So I think if we see this out, it might not happen because that has been the experience.
Sort of ironically flooding his own zone. That if the Donald Trump general modus operandi is to sort of light 10 fires at once and hope that people can only address all of them, it's almost like at this point he has lit so many fires that he himself cannot pay attention to them all.
Although he is in the midst of having to deal with continued pressure in respect of the Department of Justice releasing the full of the Epstein files, this has shoved that off the headlines, hasn't it?
Which may have been the motivation. But I mean, certainly, look, in terms of the sovereignty issue, the Second World War consensus is now, the end of Second World War consensus is now gone. And that's very troubling and incredibly historic, because what we had assumed to be the fact for the last 80 years or so of a cross-Atlantic alliance of values and understanding of never going back to where we were 100 years ago, that's now dead. And we have to you know, absolutely look at as ourselves as a union in terms of the European Union and see where we go from here, because we can't trust the Americans anymore.
If that yeah. happens, actually, is there a question? Sorry, I'm immediately just my reflexes kicked in and I'm almost suddenly like, I'm the one that's putting the question to the panel.
Fine, I'll
only do this once and then I'll let you back in again. If NATO disintegrates as a result of
it effectively has.
Yeah, but
we're honest.
But it kind of like it has, except in reality. But if it does completely just disappear out of all of this, isn't the likelihood then that the European Union suddenly becomes, or moves to become, a more formal defence union? What is the role for us if this happens?
Yeah,
on our
those
watch
conversations
this year?
Are already taking place. The $300 billion that Ursula von der Leyen has outlined as being, you know, potential for in terms of borrowing for individual member states. I mean, if you meet a Lithuanian or a Latvian or a Pole, that's all they think about is the big bear next door in terms of Russia. Okay, we used to assume as Irish people, as part of the European Union for generations, that the Americans would have our back. We can't assume that anymore. So I think culturally
but
and instinctively...
But is this a more horrifying situation to be in? Because you talk about a year of the presidency. We had gradually come to terms with, we can no longer rely on American support. To be in a position where we know European member states have had to deploy their militaries, I mean, let's not put too fine a point on it, to prevent the military annexation of an EU member state sovereign territory.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. And these are extraordinary times. But I think as Irish people, we have always, I think, looked to America as maybe being, that's where our cultural sort of, our allegiance was. That's where we had such a historic bond with. But I think we have to recast our minds. We are not the poor person of Europe anymore. We're not happy to be in the club, but sort of consider them to be another entity. We are a net contributor. We're the second biggest net contributor in terms of population. We're a serious player. We have the presidency of the European Union coming in July. And I think we have to totally reimagine our relationship with the United States. And totally reimagine culturally and politically and instinctively our relationship with the European Union. And if we are going to have to start asking ourselves serious questions about what it means if American boots arrive on Greenland soil, because Russian boots have come on into Ukrainian soil. And I think sometimes we don't necessarily understand just what a major mind shift change that has been.
But also what an economic threat it'll be, Valerie, because we uniquely are exposed in a way that a lot of the EU isn't.
But I think Russia and China must be having a great laugh at our expense, because we're doing their job for them. We're creating this almost dismantled Europe already, and we're destroying, or we're not, but the relationship between America and Europe is being destroyed. So we're doing their job for them. But at the same time, you know, every so often you have to think, how is this happening? Because 10 years ago, if we'd said that an American president was going to go in and say, I want Europe, I'll have it, or I want Greenland, whatever, we would have dismissed it completely. I mean, this is almost World War One tactics, where we covet another country and we go in and we grab it. But I also think that our politicians in Europe are doing a very bad job, because I don't think they're taking themselves seriously enough. I don't think they realise the might of Europe and how important Europe is and what Europe controls and our trade situation with other countries around the globe. We're more likely to roll over and say, oh, this is terrible. I mean, we should have been putting all of these defence factors in place years and years ago. And this nonsense of going out every year with what amounts to a cut glass bowl of salad ingredients to whoever's president at the time and bowing down and saying, oh, wonderful, we're all friendly, we're all happy. Well, we're not. I mean, this is the actual reality under what was the Disney-esque feature of our relationship with America. The Kennedys are gone. Well, one or two remain. They're not doing anything.
Well, a particularly bad actor is still.
But the good relationship Kennedys are all gone at this stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's time we all stood up for ourselves as Europeans.
But are the risks in doing so not enormous? I mean, we are so dependent on the US, both for money, for trade, for things like banking, credit card services, tech, all the rest.
But the risk of alienating the EU is a bigger risk. The EU are the ones who dragged this country out of the dark ages. When we joined, the EU had our back when it came to Brexit. We are now one of the richest countries in the European Union because of being a member, because of their investments here, because of how they helped it through infrastructure and other reasons. Our relationship with the EU far outweighs our relationship with the US. And I think when it comes to values and facing down what is now an administration that feels that military might allows them to do whatever the hell they like, And we have to be bigger than that and realize that we're now big players and stop doing, as Valerie's quite rightly said, this sort of cartoonish, slavish trip to the White House once a year. I think it now comes into major questions as to whether Micheál Martin should go at all.
When 50% of our corporation tax comes from
They care about money. They care about money, and they care about an educated workforce, and they care about our
access.
You
don't think they're coming here for the good of their health or because their great grannies came from Ireland? Come on. They're coming here, as you said, because they're making money here.
But whatever about the Irish position, what about the EU position, Gavin Reddy? What does the EU do in this setting? Because there will be people in member states saying, okay, we're getting to the point where you stop taking this and stop rolling over. Mm. But the risks and the consequences are massive.
Well, I imagine, just further to Aon's point there a moment ago, I imagine that there will probably be some pressure from European level if there was to be any doubt about Ireland taking up the invite. And I don't think Micheál Martin would ever entertain any doubts anyway. If the invite comes, I think he would go. But I think a lot of other European leaders would like him to go because they'd like him to be some kind of emissary where he sort of tries to preach from the European gospel. How easy that is to do, I don't know, because in truth, Donald Trump now foresees the world as basically having three major poles. There's America, there's Russia, and there's China. And I don't see Europe having any role in the world as he sees it.
Yeah, I know.
We project that, I don't know how Europe tries to forcibly insert itself into his thinking, how credible that is for Europe to do, given that Europe still doesn't always think with one mind on some things anyway. But Micheál Martin is going to have to go over there and try to basically be some kind of European evangelist to an audience that probably doesn't want it. Well, if it becomes confrontational, I don't know where it goes.
Gavin is
right.
The pressure will come on because very few EU leaders get into the White House, you know, and there'll be...
But would you want to get in? I mean, look what happened last year. And then Conor McGregor went in 2 days later.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
I mean, he was humiliated last year.
I think it would be an historic and I think a very powerful symbol for people here. By the way, people in America, you know, this thing can come and go and they might even notice it. But for people here, for us... to recast completely our relationship with the US and for him not to go and to say why he's not going for a number of different reasons. Because on one side of us, his lack of support for Ukraine has meant that a lot of member states are now feel incredibly insecure. He's now making moves on another member state's sovereign territory. And he is, you know, this has to be, now, whether you go and say it to him or you don't go. But I mean, what happened last year?
Look, if he goes, he's going to be seen as Trump's lapdog, going over to maybe be humiliated again. I don't know. But I mean, you cannot have somebody from Europe, Ireland or any other European country, going to the White House in that position. If they go over, they go over as a representative of a great Europe, not as a lapdog kowtowing to Trump and going in with the shamrock. I don't think the shamrock could possibly happen.
I think Gavin's point is right. That the instinct of European leaders is to negotiate and, you know, to keep the diplomatic lines open.
And he always listens to the last voice he hears.
Yeah. And the, you know, the experience of the previous tariffs has been that he shifts and changes and it can alter over a period of time. But the Greenland grab now is very different. So I think now I would seriously question the validity of Micheál Martin making that trip.
And can I go back to a point that was made there by Gavin a second ago?
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
The thing of Trump viewing the world as now three poles, the US, Russia and China.
And they have their spheres of influence, their hemispheres or whatever. Yeah.
And with the EU being largely, and Europe being largely irrelevant within that. To some extent, is he right on the irrelevancy? Because if you look at the American measures of relevancy and success, innovation, economic growth, military success, when you look at Europe, we're hardly at the races.
On those factors, I mean, you could argue economically, there's, you know, a huge amount that Europe has going for it, and Europe has its own sort of, you know, economic ecosystem, and that's pretty mighty if you measure it on certain metrics. The defence bit is probably the weak bit, and that's kind of where, you know, Ukraine exposed something of a hole, and given that Donald Trump has made his North Star trying to increase a lot of European spending on NATO anyway, so that they're not living under America's umbrella. It's kind of ironic that he sees the world as Europe not really having much of an influence, and yet through his influence, he's basically making Europe spend more on its own defence, which obviously gives it some degree of clout anyway. There was an interesting point made yesterday by Stephen Miller, who's the sort of deputy chief of staff and one of his key closest confidants, who said that one of the definitions of statehood for centuries, he said, now I should preface this by saying this is incorrect, but one of his definitions of statehood, it's a funny disclaimer that you have to add at the start, isn't it? But he said one of the definitions of statehood is that you have to be able to defend your territories. Like, it's not true. But their view is that basically, unless you're capable of defending your land, you basically don't exist as a country anyway. Which, well, what does that say about Ukraine's statehood? But also, what does it say about Greenland? What does it say about Andorra or us needing to borrow the RAF to patrol our own skies? That, like, America's definition of what makes you a country is whether you can credibly go to war to defend yourself, which has never been a threshold or a benchmark for nationhood up until now. And if that's the measuring stick, then there's not going to be very many countries left in the world.
But if Trump is going to impose all of these tariffs, he's actually going to do so much damage to America as well. I mean, their trade situation, Bond Street markets, everything, they're just going to disintegrate. And that's going to bring a great poverty to America if their trade collapses. And I don't think he's going to risk that.
Yeah. It's worthwhile actually just mentioning very briefly, the front page of the Sunday Independent does point out that there's another risk of recession, not from anything he's doing with tariffs, but because of the fight that he's picking with Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, because if he gets his way in removing Jerome Powell and basically appointing someone who can act as his own proxy in operating the American Central Bank, that in its own way creates massive economic deterioration across the world.
It's just the uncertainty. But the whole thing about this is just the level of uncertainty that it engenders in the system, that you just can't be sure the last deal you struck is going to stick. And at the moment, there's question marks over whether the EU-US deal should be validated through the committee system, should it be stalled because of what's happening in terms of his...
But even that mention of Jerome Powell, you go, I forgot that this week there were criminal charges threatened against the chair of the Fed. I mean, it's just every rolling moment is another institution.
So at what point do we say, look, I believe the America is descending into fascism. I've always felt that he was a fascist. He ticks all the boxes for it. But then again, we do any amount of trade deals with people who have, you know, questionable. I mean, the Taoiseach was over in China there recently. You know, we do kind of turn a blind eye to many things that countries do in terms of their own domestic politics when it comes to trade missions. But this is something I think that is making the EU look at itself in a very different way and reimagine itself. And I think that's probably something that should have happened a long time ago. And it might bring us actually closer together, which is possibly going to be a good thing. But the nervousness is real.
Don't you think it's important that we know more about the EU? Because it's never been a priority. And even there was a survey done last year by one of the papers where they went out in the street and asked people to name their MEPs. And most of them absolutely couldn't.
Don't worry, it happens in my own family. You know?
I'm sorry, it's a fact, you know. But I mean, if we think about Europe like that, then we're not getting back all the information. And to be honest, I think our MEPs over the years have been extremely lazy in this. They've gone off to Europe and they've done the work, but they do it so quietly that we're just not hearing about it. And I wouldn't blame the media on this at all, but I think we don't know. Somebody gets to be an MEP, they disappear. And, you know, when do you hear about them again? The next election. I'm not making a sweeping comment. Really, I'm not. But I do...
Just attack Aon directly.
Fine. Fine. Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, some people, yes, do.
But this isn't parliamentary. Don't
why I order.
But it's an interesting point you made, because Ursula von der Leyen, in the appointment letter for the last commission, one of the things it said was effectively go and teach ye many nations, go out and get into the countryside, go talk to people. I haven't seen a lot of European commissioners knocking around these studios since those instructions came down. But anyway, text to say
they'll
after...
They'll be here the second half of the year when you have the presidency, you'll be bumping into maybe 5 minutes.
After 75 years of protection by the USA via NATO, it is pathetic that Europe is still as weak as it was in World War II when the war was only won with the help of the USA. I'd say Russia wouldn't mind getting a look into that credit as well. Yeah. Micheál Martin needs to go to the White House to keep our soft power back door open, and a few more along those lines. Well, one of the things about cohesion of the EU, front page of the Business Post, there is a report that the EU is going to get cohesive in dealing with Grok and AI and nudification and all that goes with that. We'll discuss that after this break.
Sleep better and save big right now at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $800 store-wide. Get buy one, get one free deals, plus a free adjustable base on select mattresses. With 0% interest financing, free delivery, and our exclusive lifetime price guarantee, you can't miss this. Only at Sleep Outfitters. The savings are stacked at Sleep Outfitters. Right now, save up to $800 store-wide on top brands you know and trust. Plus, buy one, get one free deals so you can upgrade sleep for your entire family. And get a free adjustable base with select mattress purchases. With 0% interest financing and free delivery available, getting better sleep has never been easier. And with our exclusive lifetime price guarantee, you'll always know you got the best deal. Save big today at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com or a location near you.
Now, we were talking before the break about Aon making the point that maybe Donald Trump putting it up to the EU may cause a greater degree of EU cohesion and may cause a bit of reflection about what role the EU can and should have in the world. Front of the Business Post reporting that the EU is to investigate Grok. This is over nudification, all the rest of it. And Harris is saying that safety trumps tech money. Aon, you're a former teacher. What was your reaction to all of the stuff that you saw on Grok and also the response that came from X?
Well, I think speaking as a politician, I thought that Niamh Smith has come out with a lot of credit this week, because I think she actually hit the nail on the head of where people are with this. And she stood, I think, apart from maybe the general political reaction, which I know Simon Harris is sounding a bit more combative about it. But I thought she spoke as a human being, and I was impressed by her. So there you go. There's a bit of kind of across the political divide praise from me. But because the issue is so serious, the issue is so serious that it has to be effectively combated. Now, I've had an issue with X for a long time. I left the platform over a year ago. I felt it wasn't a particularly nice place to be. And, you know, the owner of X is, I would consider him to be interfering with the political system in many different, you know, European jurisdictions. I think he's a bad actor, but people are entitled to a particular point of view. But it's moved from what I would consider to be a far right, platform to one that is facilitating child pornography. And their reaction was initially, well, it's a free speech. Then it was like, oh, we'll ban it in countries where it should be banned. Now it's talking about something else. So I wrote to the to Henna Verkunen during the week, asking her, she's the European Commissioner with responsibility for this area, to do a compliance audit of social media companies across that are based in the EU or operate in the EU, and then to issue compliance orders. And if necessary, to ban X, to ban it from the European Union, because we don't necessarily need it. And if it is engaged in, this is the most, it is the most disgusting, violent facilitation that you can imagine that has been engaged in. And still, yes, there are people who are talking about, oh, well, you're trying to shut down people's views and that's not fair. I mean, every day of the week I hear in the European Parliament for people saying, well, you know something, I'm anti-immigration because of the risk to children. I'm anti-transgender because of the risk to children. Now you have a platform that is, you know, that is facilitating the nudification and pornographication, if that's a proper term, of children and women. And yet there are those who will still argue the toss over it. So I think when we have a platform that is openly in defiance of the Digital Services Act of the European Union, well, then the Digital Services Act and the European Union need to respond.
Now, can
and,
I ask
and,
you
and if we are seen to ban X from the European Union, irrespective of the political consequences from the White House, then I think it'll be a very strong signal to other platforms as to how they, you know, behave.
Differentiation within that. I suspect it would be relatively easier for X to deal with the issues of child pornographic material because it is so broadly illegal in so many territories. You mentioned as well the exploitation of women, because adult women have had this done to them. And the argument has been, sure, it's just pictures in a bikini. What's the big deal? Every AI does that. Is that, I use the term because I can't think of another one, is that acceptable?
The hill you die on as well? I listened to Grainne Shoyga, who had run in the general election last year, and I was very affected by her interview on RTÉ during the week. I was really taken by it, because she spoke about her own experience, but she also spoke about her niece, who was 4. I mean, I'm now in a situation, we had a group from Lucan of teenagers over in the European Parliament last week, and we had absolute, you know, authority to post photographs of the group and all the rest of it. Was that an irresponsible thing to do? I mean, do we have to second guess actually doing anything online now, because somebody will justifiably say, well, you know, I'm able to do that if they're over 18. And what Grainne said, which really affected me, because we're always doing this to try to encourage women into politics. If somebody came to her and said, I'm a woman, I want to run for election, what would her advice be? And she had to be honest and say, no, I'd advise them not to do it because of the atmosphere that's out there.
So
the danger to democracy and the danger to gender equality is so profound that there is nothing we shouldn't countenance. And that means X isn't available anymore, then we have to go there.
What if that happens, Gavin? What if we ban X across the EU or take significant... he is one of the biggest funders. He describes himself as the reason Donald Trump is elected. Mm. That throws us straight back into the belly of a completely different beast, a la Greenland.
Yeah, do you remember there was a few months last year where Elon Musk and Donald Trump weren't talking, and Elon Musk was talking about founding a new party, and then suddenly he found his sort of way back, some sort of Damascene conversion. The idea of banning X, I think, is an interesting one, because there's a structural point that's been kind of glossed over in the last week, which is that at some point after he acquired X, Elon Musk restructured the company so that X is now owned by the AI company. The social media, the social network that all of us have used or do use, is now owned by Grok. And I think that's a point that's been slightly missed because, for example, Conal Thomas has a piece on page 12 today of the Sunday Independent with Niamh Smith. And Niamh Smith, who I agree has come out with a lot of credit in the last week, says that X is trying to let Grok slip off the hook. And in her meeting with them on Friday, she was talking about, you know, you're responsible for distributing this stuff. And the people in X tried to sort of tried to divide or try to distinguish or partition between what X is responsible for as a publisher and what Grok is responsible for as an image creator, kind of missing the fact that Grok owns X. X, the social network, is a subsidiary of the AI company, and therefore that should cast an eye over everything they do. So I don't know whether trying to close off access to the social network entirely is appropriate or whether it's an overreach because of the actions of one account, albeit its owner's account that's kind of embedded within it. But I think we shouldn't be blind to the fact that the AI service, which has produced this content, which is causing such distress, and you know, I've seen what intimate images being shared, what that does to people, but it's done without their consent. Like it has a horrendous impact on their lives, and there's been some good reporting this week about the impact that it does have on people. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the network through which this is now being transmitted is owned by Grok itself. So I think the question of, oh, should you ban X? A bigger thing is whether you should just encourage or ban Grok from creating any such imagery, including, you know, put this adult woman in a bikini of any sort. It just shouldn't be permitted. One other point before I forget to say it, by the way. Grok said in its statement earlier this week when it was trying to close off access to this nudification tool, the statement said, Grok, as it is accessed through the X platform. So when somebody posts a photograph of somebody and someone replies then saying, at Grok, undress this person. That has apparently been disabled. A colleague of mine, Richard Chambers, asked X that morning, does this also apply to the Grok app individually? Because Grok does also exist in the abstract away from X. And they said, yes, it does. They said that on Thursday morning. When we were in the waiting room reading the newspapers, yeah. I tried it. I uploaded a selfie of myself, said, undress this man.
Yeah.
And it did it.
It did it.
It's like 80 hours on.
We have been chasing social media companies for different reasons to have a level of responsibility for what happens on their platforms. And they don't care. That is the experience, that they don't care. So until, you know, the democratic institutions decide that we do care, this is child abuse. It's child abuse. And it's there for everybody to see. So how serious are we?
One final area before we move on. In terms of very difficult problems to solve, there is coverage inside the papers of Wilson's Hospital School and what impact the unending presence of, well, it's not unending because he does spend some time in jail. But when he's not in jail, he's at the door of Wilson's Hospital. And it seems to be a very nice school from the coverage inside Valerie Cox.
Yeah.
What do you do about Enoch Burke? What do you do about somebody who willfully seeks to get himself arrested?
Well, I don't think we've handled it very well. I don't think the school has handled it very well. I don't think the courts have handled it very well. This should have been cut off early on without all of this publicity. Look, the principal of the school, Noel Cunningham, he invited the Sunday Independent in to have a tour of the school. And it does seem like a very nice school, very nice people, all the rest of it. Apparently, the children are all very intelligent, a great place to go to school. It's a boarding school and a day school. But seriously, the fuss we've let this, the circus we've let this turn into is absolutely ridiculous.
But what's our alternative, Valerie? If somebody comes in and you say, now look, you can get out of prison to prepare your defence, but don't go to the school next morning at the school. What do you do?
Because when this started, the principal then should have said, right, let's think outside the box here, you know, and what they would have done was they would have said, you know, Enoch, we have a little job for you. We want you to conduct weekend seminars, or we want you to go to Europe and do some research for us. There's ways of getting around it.
Hold on.
Instead of that,
I could explain Aeon's expression.
I was going to accuse Gavin of a bit of Enoching, hanging around the place he used to work in.
It's becoming a word. But, you know, seriously, though, I think this should have been toned down from a very early stage.
But now that it's not, now that it's ended up here, what do you do if you're the judiciary where you know he's just going to keep going
I have a strong view on this. because I know this guy is a kind of a hero. And so this guy, I mean, he's a fundamentalist. He comes from a fundamentalist family.
Which is his right and their right.
He has put his own political or personal viewpoints ahead of those of the children of the school in which he was working. You don't do that. He is no longer working in the school. He's been told to stay. I mean, if anybody else who was no longer working in school was hanging around, I mean, it is legitimate to arrest him.
What does the court system do? If you're the high court judge, you know he's going to show up Monday morning. We're going to tell him again. He's going to do it again.
I'm sorry. I have zero sympathy for the guy. I have zero sympathy for people who are trying to promote him as some kind of a latter-day hero. You have to keep arresting him. And you have to keep arresting him. I think his family are obnoxious. I think what he's doing is outrageous. He's also now attracting a kind of a group of supporters who apparently during the week were shouting abuse at people walking into the school. It is absolutely intolerable. And if he needs to be keep being arrested and thrown into Mountjoy, it's not where he belongs if he had any cop. But if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes.
Just for people who think that this is something of a media creation, by the way, and that if, you know, the media just ignored it,
well,
that it
would go
away.
I also have a sympathy for that view, by the way, I'll be frank about it. Well, I think if the media didn't show up,
I thought you might, but which is why I wanted to say this. Firstly, that there was a lot of time before,
accused you of being an Enoch,
before he was in jail. Yeah, there I go, standing up myself. Before he was in jail, he was regularly standing at the gate for days on end with no media presence, and he was still there because of that's the principle that he's decided to take. But I also think that ultimately what this boils down to is a question as to whether the courts have jurisdiction to enforce the laws of the land. And what happens if somebody tries to wear the courts down through attrition so that they can basically not have the law of the land applied to them? And that's the kind of the fundamental substance. And although, yeah, the story might not have moved on because we're in the same logjam as we were largely 6 or 12 or 18 months ago, the point is a case where people are kind of beginning to let their eyes glaze over to the point where somebody might be able to wear the courts down and get out of the net of the law of the land. And that's a substantive and interesting point, and it's one that's well worthy of covering by the media. And I don't think the media should make any apologies for continuing to cover it the way they have.
Well, they'll be covering it doubtless tomorrow morning, because I think he's back in front of the High Court tomorrow morning. A text saying, posts, this is in relation to social media, posts should be simply traceable. So those who abuse the privilege of free speech can be accountable, rather than, as is the case, an awful lot of anonymous bots on social media.
The point being, though, the Grok still exists away from X, and people have sort of come to think of it as just an account on X that undresses people. But actually, there's the AI app that still exists in the abstract, which can still do it just out of the public eye. And there's a question as to whether that's more or less insidious than the other, you know?
On the topic of AI, coming up after the break, we're going to be joined by, or rather after the news, we're going to be talking to the Minister for Education, because there is a big convention on the future of education. And also there is that issue of how AI is deployed positively in schools and how students are protected. Big thank you to Eleanor Reardon, Labour MEP, Valerie Cox, journalist, and Gavin Riley, political correspondent at Virgin Media premises, who will now be escorted off these premises so he doesn't stand outside the door.
All right, everybody. I'm never leaving. You can't get rid of me.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.